Once again this evening, it's good to see everyone here, and again, especially some that I have known in the past, and once again, hasten to add, who have listened to me before, and they have still come. It does encourage me a great deal. One of the things I think about, when I think about heaven, is being reunited with both loved ones who have gone before. As I mentioned here, Sunday, added to that number now is my own dad. And all the Christians that are throughout the country that you don't get to see very much at all. And then, of course, pretty soon life is so short and they pass on. But one day we can all be in the land where there is no more parting and be together there throughout eternity. Tonight our subject is one that, again, is relevant. If it were not relevant, I wouldn't have chosen to talk about it. It's one that you really cannot adequately cover in one sermon, and I admit that up front. I will not try to preach two or three and be excessive just trying to cover it all. But it's one that I feel compelled to talk about and try to fit it in gospel meetings. And I'm talking about the subject of marriage and divorce. Maybe this little cartoon that I found some time ago will illustrate why some preachers don't like to talk about it too much anymore. My sermon for this morning is divorce and remarriage. And he's ready for whatever's going to follow because he knows it's not a popular subject. Somewhere I come across another one, and I couldn't find it. Shows a preacher getting ready to preach an unpopular subject, and he's got his suitcases up here already packed. They're around him on the pulpit. And he says, "I've been wanting to preach this for a long time." And that assumedly was his last sermon in that place. Divorce, even when there are slight dips in the statistics, the number of divorces is still hovering around 50%. It goes a little bit below that some years, goes back up above it in other years, but basically, one out of every two marriages end in failure. For a lot of people, you might say that divorce is to poor choice what abortion is to birth control. Whatever method people are using doesn't work and a baby results anyway, well, no problem, we'll just get an abortion. And when people make a poor choice in the selection of their mate and it doesn't work, they just say, no problem, we can get a divorce. And in many states, you don't even really have to put up too much of a reason for it, no fault divorce. And in fact, in a lot of places, maybe most places, the fact that your mate may have committed adultery and been unfaithful to you and to the vows that you made before God and other witnesses usually is of no consequence. They could care less. That's the way the world views things. And it's sad that even people who are members of the body of Christ have the same attitude about it very often. Or they have found a preacher somewhere who will comfort them with the fact that there are more reasons for marriage and divorce than what most preachers talk about, and would lead them to believe that you can divorce almost for any cause, especially if you're willing to remain single until your spouse remarries, and then upon their remarriage, now then you can put them again away again, mentally this time, and you can go out and find yourself another mate, because after all, now they've committed adultery. They act as if nobody except the courts noticed the first one. And so all of these theories are out there. One of the charts I brought, I don't know if I'll take time to put it up there or not, summarizes the various views that people have had on the subject in about 8 different positions on marriage, divorce, and remarriage, ranging all the way from some who hold that there is no acceptable reason for marrying, divorcing, and marrying another. All the way to the other extreme, of course, which would be that you can marry and divorce and remarriage for almost any cause. All of these people act as if the Bible hadn't said much about marriage, divorce, and remarriage, when in fact it has. And we want to study the subject tonight, and we're not going to exhaust the subject by any means because we don't have time. But divorce is so frivolous in the minds of many people that it's almost typified by this small cartoon that I found one time. The judge telling him, "No, you can't divorce your wife on the grounds that she refuses to laugh at your jokes." You know, that's somebody in the world recognizing how frivolous some people are toward their marriage and the fact that they are tired of the wife that they have and doesn't suit them in one way or another. What people need to remember is that when marriage takes place, there's a man and a woman. We definitely need to stress that these days. Some people think two men can get married or two women can get married. But marriage is something that involves a man, a woman, and God, because they make a covenant together in the sight of God. And God binds them together. And if we could get people to realize, and that's what this is supposed to show, that if they will try to draw closer to God, then they will automatically be drawing closer to each other. The best way to improve your marriage is to become a more faithful Christian than you are right now. Now, I recognize you may be married to someone who doesn't care about God, but your obligation is still to draw closer to God. And that will help you to deal with all the adversity that you have because of the behavior of the other person in your marriage. Looked at perhaps another way, we can say that marriage involves being joined on these three levels. There's the leaving of father and mother and cleaving to one another. There is involved some kind of civil contract that varies from one society and one culture to another. But there is the one that most people forget about. There is the divine yoking of those two individuals together. And that's why when Jesus was asked the question he was in the 19th chapter of the book of Matthew, "Can a man divorce his wife for any cause at all?" And he entered into that dialogue with them, that he eventually, down in verse 6, said, "Consequently, they are no more two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate." People think by going to the courts that they can undo this divine yoking. They cannot. That yoking takes place in the mind of God. And he only looses a man and a woman who have been marriage partners for one cause, as we're going to notice. And until he does that, they are yoked together. Someone says, "Well, if they got a divorce." Well, fine, they've got a divorce. I don't mean fine in the standpoint of good. Recognizing, yes, they did get a divorce, they only undid the civil contract. They cannot undo what God has done. And God has only promised to undo that for one of the individuals, by the way, under the one circumstance, the one exception cited by Jesus himself in this very same text. Verse 9, "And I say to you that whoever divorces his wife except for fornication and marries another commits adultery. And whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery." The exception was applied by the Lord himself in the upper part of that verse, as we'll look at a little bit later, to the one who does the putting away for fornication. The other one that becomes involved in another marriage results, according to Jesus, in adultery. All the way throughout the Bible, God's attitude toward divorce has been the same. The last prophet, written prophet that is, of the Old Testament, records in the second chapter, and he talks about in this chapter, apparently, the flippant attitude that some of them had toward their marriages. And how that some of them, as it were, apparently, from what he says in verse 14 of Malachi chapter 2, were not really respectful toward the wife of their youth. He says, "Because the Lord has been a witness between you and the wife of your youth, against whom you've dealt treacherously, though she is your companion and your wife by covenant. But not one has done so who has a remnant of the Spirit. And what did that one do while he was seeking a godly offspring? Take heed then, to your spirit, and let no one deal treacherously against the wife of your youth. Why did he say that? He goes on and says, for I hate divorce. God hates divorce. The people among whom we live don't seem to understand that. They act as if divorce is perfectly acceptable, especially if your marriage is not as happy as you'd like for it to be. Just get a divorce. You know, there used to be the attitude among people, well, we're going to stay together for the sake of the children. They need to have an intact home, mother and father. Well, we have to give thanks to all the meddling psychologists and psychiatrists of the world who come along and suggested, no, you know, that's not really very good because... And now those children will be in a home where there's some fighting and bickering going on, and that's not good for them to see that. You'd be better off to divorce. That's not so, and really studies now in the last few years have shown that they're better off in an intact family, even if the husband and wife are not getting along as well as they should. They are still better off in a home where they're both there. Well, so much for their wisdom. Later on, of course, in the Old Testament, by the time of Deuteronomy 24, I say later on from the standpoint of the original ideal of marriage, one man, one woman for life, hardness of heart came along, and in Deuteronomy 24, there was a concession granted by God. Jesus, of course, discusses that in Matthew 19:9 as they raise that point with him, as he answered their question by saying, have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female? And for this cause a man shall leave his father and mother, shall cleave to his wife, and the two of them shall become one flesh. And then I read verse 6, consequently they no more two flesh, but one. What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate. Oh, they thought they had the Lord. They said, well, now wait a minute here. Why then did Moses command to give a writing of divorcement? If it's as you say it is, Jesus, then why were they granted this certificate that allowed them to send that person away? I don't imagine they liked the answer, but the answer was because of your hardness of heart, which immediately put them in the spot of trying to justify putting their mate away and admitting by doing that then, if they wanted God's approval, if their argument was it must be okay because God granted through Moses these certificates, they'd have to admit that if it applied to them, they had a hard heart. I don't think they liked that. Of course, they didn't like much of what Jesus had to say to them as they sought to entrap him. Because of your hardness of heart, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it has not been this way. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for fornication and marries another commits adultery. Jesus gave one and only one exception. Now, very often we're told by advocates of one particular position that none of this applies before people are Christians. Very well-respected men, such as Brother Homer Haley and others, advocate that none of what Jesus says in Matthew 19:9 has any application or bearing on people so long as they're out there in the world. That they come under this part of the teaching of marriage and divorce and are bound to remain with their mate, except for that one exception, only after they become a Christian. And it's a shame that men such as him and others have taken that position and have taught that down through the years. And I'm always amazed at the defense, especially of Brother Haley, whom I do not know personally, that, well, you know, he didn't go around teaching that publicly. Friends, aren't we warned in the New Testament about teachers who go around from house to house? I believe we are. And yet here they seek to get us to have fellowship with and thereby encourage the teaching of false doctrine. One of the arguments, of course, that some of them use on that is, well, after all, you surely don't think that God would want people to break up marriages that have already begun and maybe there will be children involved. Well, it wouldn't be the first time that's had to take place because you go to the Old Testament book of Ezra. And that's exactly what was required of some of the Jews back there. They had married women who were classified as foreign wives. They had not remained in choosing their marriage partner from among the Israelites. And yes, they were told to put those foreign wives away. What about those children? Well, they had to take care of their children. But they had to separate themselves and divorce themselves from the mates that they had no right to begin with. Yes, there is biblical precedent for a marriage being broken up. Sometimes in advocating that, they say, well, now, you know, you fellows who believe that, you have to stick your nose in and find out what kind of marital situation you have with the people with whom you're studying. Because after all, you need to find out whether it's scriptural or not. I say in return to them, they're the ones that better stick their nose into the person's marriage and find out what it's like. And what they need to ask those people, are you happily married? And if the fellow says, well, you know, come, get me real honest about it, I'm not very happily married. Well, then, I'll come back and baptize you when you find a wife with whom you are happily married. Because you see, once I baptize you, you got to stay with this woman. They're the ones that need to find out how happily married those people are. So you see, that fits them just as much or more than it fits us. Yes, I'm going to talk to somebody that I'm studying with. I'm not going to ask them all kinds of personal questions about everything in their life, but marriage is a pretty important area of life. And if I find out that their marriage is not what it ought to be, I'm going to talk to them about Matthew 19 and other passages and let them count the cost, because Jesus talked about counting the cost if you're going to be one of my disciples. And they need to know up front, if they're in an unscriptural marriage, that part of the cost, the sacrifice they're going to have to make, is giving up that mate whom they may love very dearly if they want to serve the Lord. Well, we see from Matthew 19 that God's intention from the beginning never changed. One man, one woman for life. And that marriage is an honorable relationship. Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 4. Let marriage be held in honor among all. Let the bed be undefiled. But fornicators and adulterers God will judge. God gave the gift of sex to men and women, and it is to be practiced in marriage, in the marriage relationship, and not outside before marriage, and not outside in extramarital relationships. God gave us that capacity, that gift to enjoy between a husband and wife. No, sex is not dirty. God placed the desires within us, and He regulates it, just like every other desire He gave us, for our own well-being, but it's regulated. It keeps those who become strongly desirous of that opposite sex from committing fornication. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, Paul begins here to answer a series of questions, and he says, concerning the things whereof you wrote, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Some have misinterpreted that to say, have Paul saying that it's better off if you never marry. That's not what he said. It's good, it's all right if you do not touch a woman. That is, if you do not marry. But because of fornication, let each man have his own wife and let each woman have her own husband. I've actually attended debates on this subject, where men who call themselves gospel preachers in front of an audience like this advance the argument to support their contention that you can marry and divorce and remarry for a lot of different reasons, and they use as one of their arguments, after all, you take this divorced person out here who maybe was the put-away person, or maybe they divorced for some reason other than adultery. Why, you know, if they go out here and engage in sex with somebody, they're going to be committing fornication. And Paul says to avoid that fornication, they should get married. No, Paul didn't say to avoid fornication, get married. He said to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife. Didn't say anything about having somebody else's wife. Let every man have his own wife and let every woman have her own husband. So they twist and they pervert what the Apostle Paul was trying to say in this passage. There's only one exception for divorce that is allowed by Jesus Christ, and that is fornication. Under all other circumstances, God expects marriages to last a lifetime. Romans, the 7th chapter, as Paul was talking to them of the relationship that they sustained to the law of Moses, it's illustrated here by the relationship of marriage and divorce. He says, do you not know, brethren, I'm speaking to those that know the law, starting out in Romans 7, verse 1, that the law has jurisdiction over a person as long as he lives. For the married woman is bound by law to her husband while he is living. But if her husband dies, she's released from the law concerning the husband. Now that tells us right there that somebody else is involved in this besides that man and that woman. It says that she is released. Released by whom? Well, released by God from the law concerning the husband. So then, if while her husband is living, she's joined to another man, she shall be called an adulteress. But if her husband dies, she's free from the law, so that she's not an adulteress, though she's joined to another man. And of course, the application was, they were free from the law of Moses so that they could be married to Christ. That was his main point. Illustrated by the fact that once your mate dies, you then are free. You are released by God to marry another. Now, if that doesn't happen and your mate is still living, then the only other reason for putting them away and marrying another, according to the Lord, is that of fornication. Now, you know, people say, well, that's awful narrow, and you know, you're not going to convert very many people like that. Well, what other law of God shall we water down in order to convert more people? Let's say it's all right then to drink socially. You know what? If we'll begin to teach that social drinking is okay, we can convert more people. So let's quit being so narrow-minded about social drinking. Where are you going to draw the line? Well, once you decide you're going to water down the Word of God, there really is no place to draw a line. Because no matter where you choose to draw the line, I'm going to move it. And someone else won't like where I drew the line, they're going to move it a little farther. For pretty soon there is nothing that we can really teach and preach on with any certain conviction whatsoever. Let's ask the question at this point, what's wrong with divorce? I raise this question because there are people who believe that it's all right to get a divorce for other reasons other than fornication, so long as you don't remarry. I've heard that all of my life. And they build a pretty good case for it, particularly from an emotional standpoint. They cite circumstances of a marriage that's very, very difficult. And it does. It's heart-wrenching to hear about some of the situations that people are in. What law of God shall we set aside, whether this one or another one, based on some set of circumstances that we can find that seems to dictate the necessity of setting aside the law of God? What's wrong with divorce is that it breaks God's command. And I'm speaking here again back in Matthew 19 and verse 6. What did Jesus say? What therefore God hath joined together, let no man separate. Divorce without cause of fornication is wrong. It's a sin because it breaks God's command. Without that exception there, we have no right to seek to undo something that God has joined together. Unless fornication is the cause, either one or both of the parties involved sin in obtaining a divorce. That's just the way that it is, Matthew 19 and verse 6. Another thing about that's wrong with divorce is that vows are broken. Two people stand before a preacher or a judge or some other duly recognized official, and usually a room full of witnesses, and they vow that they are going to be faithful to one another till death do us part. You know, it's amazing that people in the world who just really ignore the Word of God on that, for the most part, still have that in their vows. It must be a matter of tradition because they don't pay much attention to it. But they still make the vow to each other that they will be there through sickness and in health, for richer, for poor, until death do us part. And whether they know it or not, that's exactly what God expects out of them. And it's not a light thing in the eyes of God to just break a vow. Back in the book of Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 5, the wise man there says, it's better not to vow than to vow and not keep it. So we need to be careful about making vows, saying that we are without question going to do a certain thing, any kind of vow. If you vow to do something, you better keep it, or you'd be better off, according to that passage, not to make the vow. We've got to keep our promises. And this amounts, if I say, well, I'm just not going to stay with that woman any longer. No, she hasn't become unfaithful to me. This marriage is just on the rocks. Don't have a right to do that. Not be pleasing in the eyes of God. Another thing about divorcing, without intention initially to remarry, is that it puts our mate over here in jeopardy. Again, in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, we noted verse 1, how that, to avoid fornication, let each one have his own wife, let each woman have her own husband. He then discusses the role that both the husband and the wife have in the fulfillment of the sexual desires of their mate. He said, let the husband fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. It works both ways. There is not to be in a marriage the withholding of oneself in order to extract something from the other one. The wife is not to think within herself, I'll get him to come around to my way of thinking. He can just go sleep on the couch. And he can keep on sleeping there till he comes around to my way of thinking. That's sinful. And it would be just as sinful if it was the other way around. And Paul gives the reason. For the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise also the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Stop depriving one another, except by agreement, for a time. And it's very limited here, isn't it? That you may devote yourself to prayer and come together again, lest Satan tempt you because of your lack of self-control. That's why I say this person who says, well, I'm going to divorce my mate, but I'm not going to remarry, they place them in jeopardy. That is the exact opposite of the way Paul argues here. Paul argues you fulfill what your duty is to your wife or your husband so that they are not put in a position of being tempted by Satan. And when people go out here and divorce, and they initially have no idea in their mind to remarry, they're putting their mate in jeopardy, and Paul says, don't do that. Don't do that. It's wrong. Our obligation, as he talks about later in the seventh chapter toward our mate, and he specifically talks about one that would not be a Christian, is to so live before them that we might be able to convert them. Well, you don't convert them by putting them in jeopardy. Another thing about divorcing like that, if there are children involved, it puts children at risk. They need an intact home. They need a mother and a father. Our country is experiencing, of course, right now, a breakdown in values. I don't know what it'll take to wake the American people up. I don't know if anything will. Because by and large now, when people are brave enough to go out there, whether running for political office or not, and talk about values, they're just laughed right out of the ballpark. And they're told that those values are old-fashioned. That they won't work anymore. And when you reminisce about television shows of years past, such as Leave It to Beaver and Father Knows Best, and other shows like that, some of you are old enough to remember them, I know, and some of you younger people have seen them on Nickelodeon. Why, they laugh at the idea. You mean, you think that really represented a typical family in the 1950s? I say, yes, it did. It certainly did. Well, they said there were broken homes back then. I know there were, but there were not as many. And I can remember having friends who were in that situation, and I'll tell you what, it was hard on them. And if they think those values are old-fashioned and won't work anymore, they're crazy. God's word, will always work when people are willing to apply it. And we could immediately see improvement in our society if people would gain some respect for God's word. But they ridicule it. And that's led people, even in the church, to maybe think that, well, it's not that big a deal. I just won't get remarried. Well, they're depriving their children of a father to be around. Or if it's the husband, he's depriving his children of a mother in the home. And neither one of them have a right to do that. The obligations of parents is pretty clear. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, of course, fathers are to train their children, to bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Mothers are to love their children, love their husband, Titus 2 and verse 5. Children need love and security and guidance. They can't have that if mother or dad get selfish and decide to just terminate the marriage for some unscriptural reason. For the balance of our time, I want to talk about how we can prevent divorce. More, of course, could be said on the subject, but time doesn't permit it because I want to spend some time on these things. Divorce could be prevented if a person would marry a faithful Christian. Don't just think that if you marry a Christian, you'll be all right. You need to marry a faithful Christian. I know cases of where people have married, I'm thinking of one that I'm personally acquainted with. She married a preacher's son and thought, surely that's going to be all right. His dad's a preacher. That marriage ended in divorce. There's no guarantee if you marry a preacher's son. Is he a faithful Christian? Marry a faithful Christian. All kinds of problems are going to result if you decide not to do that. All kinds of problems. An article came out several years ago about someone marrying an unfaithful. Fact of the matter is, she married a guy who wasn't even a Christian. She was a Christian. He was not. They loved each other. He went to services with her before they were married, but he made up his mind that once they were married, he'd quit going. And he did. First Sunday after they were married, she was getting ready to go to services. He tried to get her to stay home. She went alone. That went on for several years. The article then says they had their first child. She missed two Sundays when the child was born, but the next Sunday she and her baby went to church service. He stayed home alone. After that, he did everything he could to prevent her from going. She had married a man who was not a Christian. But you know what? She remained faithful. As the story goes on, one Sunday, he went outside, disconnected the coil wire on the car. She and her baby got into the car. It wouldn't start. She wrapped the baby up and started walking. Church building was 2 miles away. He felt bad about that, called her back, told her what he'd done, asked her forgiveness, took her to services, went with her. 2 weeks later, he was baptized into Christ, and sometime later, he started preaching the gospel. Now, what's the point of that little story, which is a true story? If you have already married someone that's not a Christian, then the only real hope you have of ever converting him is just be as faithful as you can be. Just be as absolutely faithful as you can be. Don't waver. And you may just end up being able to convert him. Several years ago, also, a fellow did a study in a congregation where he was of these kinds of marriages and found some very interesting statistics. You may have seen these before. Out of all of these different situations that had arisen in that congregation, 143 Christians over a 20-year period, 79 of them married non-Christians. Out of that, as you can see up there, I think you can see the numbers, 52 of them left the church. 25 of them ended in divorce. 14 converted their mates. 22 remained faithful. It's not very good, is it? The other 64 out of the 143 married Christians. Only 5 of them left the church. Only 2 of those marriages ended in divorce. And 59 out of 64 remained faithful. It makes a difference. Marry a faithful Christian. It will indeed make a difference. Just think of the things you're not going to be able to share with your unbelieving mate. You're at services and someone responds to the invitation. There's great joy among all the Christians that are there over that baptism. And you're going to go home to your unbelieving mate. Who are you going to share it with? He won't care. Won't be anything to him. Won't mean anything to him. As far as he's concerned, it's just another sucker who listened to what was said and got all emotional or something and got wet. You won't have anyone to share that with. Most of the time, women end up in this boat, it seems like, and I've had them talk to me about things like that and say, you know, I don't have anybody to share these kinds of joyous things with. My husband doesn't care. Heaven is going to be your goal, but it won't be his. Several years ago, they interviewed Donny Osmond, Barbara Walters, not one of my favorite news people. She interviewed old Donny Osmond, who, you know, is a Mormon, and asked him about marrying someone that was not a Mormon. He said, "I'm not ever going to do that." Well, she said, what if you did? He said, "I'm not ever going to do that." Well, I know you say what, you know, but what if you did? He says, "I'm not ever going to do that." He would never even entertain for her the possibility. And that's the way we need to be about it. Someone says, "Well, what if you marry somebody that's not a faithful Christian?" Well, I'm not going to do that. Determine that you're not going to do that. Don't even entertain the possibility of doing so. Marry a faithful Christian. Well, someone says, "I didn't do that, but I'm dating. I haven't got married yet, but I'm dating." You may need to get a divorce already then before you get married. Now, here's how that happens. If you're going with someone and you're dating them and you're pretty serious about them, and you've already caught them in at least one lie, then you run as fast as you can away from that person. Because marriage is built upon trust. Absolute trust in one another. And if you can't trust the person that you're going with, then what makes you think that when you marry them, all of a sudden you're going to be able to trust them? Not going to happen. A lie destroys trust. It's a sin, of course, anyway. Lie not to one another. The Bible gives that message in the Old and New Testament both. We're not to go around telling lies. We are to be people that you can just take their word to the bank. So if you're going with someone who lies, whether it's about something important or not so important, but they are given to lying, you better divorce them right now. Don't even marry someone like that. If that favorite fellow of yours has a violent temper, divorce him before you even marry him. Don't even go any further with him. Well, then he promises me he's going to change when we get married. Uh-huh. So do a lot of other men. If you're going with someone that doesn't have any self-control, in other words, has a violent temper, and you very often are the object of their lack of self-control, again, that's something we're commanded to have, 2 Peter 1:6. Don't even marry somebody like that. Just get away from them. If you're going with somebody that uses alcohol or drugs, other drugs, oh, they're promising you they're going to quit. Divorce them right now. Don't even marry them. Don't even think about it. Because the odds are they're not going to quit. The odds are they're going to try to involve you in that sin if they haven't already. And once they get you up to the altar of matrimony and they have you in a marriage relationship, they'll have one less reason to quit. They already got you now. And especially if they know what your convictions are about marriage and divorce, they know that you earnestly believe there's only one cause for putting away, they'll use that against you. They'll figure, "I can just behave about any way I want. She won't divorce me because I'm not going to be unfaithful to her, and she'll just be stuck with me." Don't even consider marrying someone like that. Drinking, even social drinking, is a sin. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 3 condemns drunkenness, revelings, and drinking parties. It hits all levels of using alcoholic drinks. All levels of it. If you're going with someone who demands that you have sex with them before you get married, you divorce them right now. "Oh, but he's told me that it'll just be a secret. He won't tell anybody." I'll tell you something, girls. Boys have a problem. They kiss and tell. They talk about what they've done over the weekend in the locker room on Monday morning. They brag to the other boys about what they've done. What you do with him on that date is going to become knowledgeable among other people. Count on it. Don't destroy your reputation by believing some old young boy who lies like that. Divorce someone like that before you ever marry them. Remember, that sex is a privilege of marriage. not something to be treated lightly, not something to be given away just because some young man makes some promise to be real quiet about it, won't tell anybody about it. Just don't even believe any of that. Don't believe it. Extramarital relationships may come along after that as well, because people don't control themselves. If they didn't have any control when they were dating you and talked you into doing that, you don't know what they're going to do after they marry you. They're all of a sudden going to become principled people and people of convictions. Chances are they're not going to. They're not going to. Remember Hebrews 13 and verse 4. Marriage is to be honorable and the bed is to be undefiled. Fornicators and adulterers are going to be judged and condemned by God. Of course, we're told now on the subject of extramarital affairs that, you know, that's just natural. Have you ever heard this yet? And this is a few years old now. Some scientists came up with the conclusion that it's just a natural thing for us to bond with one individual, get married, and be faithful for a while, and then go out here and become restless and cheat. You know why that's so? Evolution. What they concluded. Why this drive to wander? Evolution. 5 million years ago. Climatic changes in Africa caused the destruction of trees. Now get this, if this is not the dumbest thing I ever heard in my life. Climatic changes in Africa caused the destruction of trees, which forced our chimp-like ancestors to become bipeds. That's, you know, walking around like this. Females could no longer swing from trees with babies on their back. Any woman in her right mind carrying around a 20-pound bowling ball would help look for a mate to help her. So it's just natural, see, for these men to be out there roaming around, and there's another woman who just couldn't help it. You know, that's a bunch of nonsense, but that's what they teach in our schools. That's what we pay tax dollars for, is for people to write books like that and promote them. No, cheating is not a normal thing. It's a sin. And if you marry someone that you can't even trust before you marry them, don't think you'll be able to trust them afterwards. They're not all of a sudden going to become trustworthy. Another thing, if you're going with someone right now, a young man or a young lady for that matter, and they don't show proper respect for their parents, get away from them. You can tell a lot by a person how they treat their parents. If they don't respect their parents, if a boy doesn't respect his mother, why is he going to respect you? Chances are that he will not. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother, Ephesians 6, 1 and 2. So sometimes we can prevent a breakdown in marriage by being more careful, of course, about who we marry. And if you're marrying someone naturally that doesn't have the attitude and disposition of mind that this marriage is going to work and it's going to last till death do us part, then you surely don't want to consider marrying them. I mentioned a while ago that marriage vows still have the words till death do us part. And it hasn't been that many years ago in many states where the only cause for divorce was adultery. But of course, it's not that way anymore, so we got to be careful. We better show more wisdom than what people out there in the world do about their mates. We've got to choose good mates. Find a faithful Christian and marry them. Well, we haven't talked about what you need to do to be saved tonight. Hadn't been the subject of it, but maybe you are here and you're not a child of God. The best thing that you can do to improve your marriage is to become a Christian if you're already married. The best thing that you can do to one day prepare for marriage is to become a Christian and begin to devote your life to God, to the principles in His Word. And you'll end up being a good wife or a good husband because that's the determination you have to please God. And if you work real hard to please God, then you'll be able to please your mate in the years that are ahead. And those of us that are already married, we need to really show more appreciation for the godly husbands and wives that we have. Let them know that we appreciate them maybe more than we do. If you're here tonight and you're subject to the invitation of heaven, we hope that you'll come as we stand and we sing together.